You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, there's a new country on the way that you probably don't know anything about. I didn't until a few minutes ago. The name of the country is Bougainville. And John D. Koons is with us now. John, a native of the New York metropolitan area, an expert on Bougainville and the mining aspects. It's really a resource play. We welcome you to the show, John. So tell us all about Bougainville.
Gary, thank you. It's great to be here with you. Well, Bougainville right now, for your audience, the most important thing I can mention is that it's on the front line of what is expected by most to be the predominant conflict that the U.S. will be facing over the next decades. And that is the conflict with the People's Republic of China. China is trying to get control of Bougainville, which, as you mentioned, is about to become the newest nation on Earth. That's because Bougainville is sitting on the Panguna mine, at one point owned by and developed by Rio Tinto, which, when it operated from 1972 to 1989, was the largest and most profitable copper and gold mine in the world. Geologists estimate that its reserves still approximate $100 billion. And so that's why China wants Bougainville, even though the people don't want to be a colony of China. They want to pursue their own independence. And hopefully our country, the United States, can help them.
That's fascinating that the Papua New Guinea has got some of the most prolific, highest producing gold mines in the world. And they seem to have had a rough history with various international mining companies. Barrick had a big property there that I think they got the license, wasn't renewed recently. There's a lot of mining there, and there's a lot of poverty there. What is the standard of living and the living conditions like in Bougainville?
Well, the first thing for me to mention is that Bougainville fought a civil war with its parent government of Papua New Guinea over the Panguna mine. And as a result, Bougainville they won the war. They got their own constitution, their own president, their own legislature, and the right to conduct an independence referendum, which they did in December 2019. 98% of the people voted to become independent, and that's why Bougainville is going to become the newest nation on Earth. But more importantly, Carrie, to your point, Bougainville's constitution is very different than the constitution in PNG. The reason that PNG has so much strife surrounding its mines is because there's real confusion in the underlying legal documents as to who controls the resources in PNG. That is not what the case is in Bougainville. Bougainville's mining resource rules parallel the greatest country in the world, namely ours, in which if you're the landowner, you, not the government, but you, the landowner, control the resource underneath your land or above your land. And so in Bougainville, that's what the current situation is. They just need some help financially and technologically in order to redevelop the Panguna mine. And that's what I'm doing there. And that's what They Call Me Ishmael is all about. It's a novel, but it's based on completely real and true events.
Right. So China's trying to get it. They're interfering right now in the Solomon Islands. Australia has said if that China builds a military base in the Solomon Islands, that's the red. That's the line in the sand. That's the red line. They do that. It's war. They're going to try to do the same thing in Bougainville.
China has already tried many, many times to take control of Bougainville, both politically and industrially. They haven't been successful. But to be honest with you, Kerry, I remember somebody else, a leading governmental figure in the United States, saying there was a red line, and when somebody crossed it, he didn't do anything. And that could happen in Australia as well. We're going to be put to the test in the South Pacific, as well as, of course, right in Eastern Europe and the Ukraine and so forth. So I don't know exactly what Australia will do, but I know what we in the United States have to do. We have to start paying more attention to what used to be a place in the world we could count on, which is the Western Pacific.
Yeah, it's a little scary the way the U.S. seems to literally be self-immolating, withdrawing from any place of leadership. I mean, I know the U.S. has done a lot of wrong things in the past in its sometimes what might be perceived as an imperialist drive to dominate, particularly in Latin America. We've seen it in the Philippines and other places. But what you have to look at is, what is the alternative? China is not exactly an advocate of human and individual rights, and they're much into the colonization mode that the U.S. is still criticized for today.
Well, you're absolutely right, but what I will say is they're in a very advanced days of colonial aggression compared to what we're conducting these days. I mean, you know, between the Belt and Road, and then, as you mentioned, you know, okay, Solomon Islands, China started with their Belt and Road economic initiative in the Solomons. And let me tell you, the Solomons is right across the water from Bougainville. So I know exactly what's going on over there. And China's completely taken over. Commercially, nobody does anything in the Solomons without China's approval. But now, as you mentioned, they're upgrading their involvement to a military involvement. They tried to lease Tulagi, which is the naval base where JFK's PT-109 was based in World War II. That collapsed. Now they're trying to do it again. And as you mentioned, Australia is saying, well, you can't do that or else. But look, I mean, Australia has been watching the Chinese eat their lunch down in that part of the world for 20 or 30 years now. And I think they've kidded themselves into thinking that, well, we've worked hard to get this, you know, bucolic environment that we can all live and work in. And guess what? You don't get that kind of environment unless you're willing to pay the price. And we'll see whether the West, Australia, the United States, et cetera, is willing to do what it takes. But China, to come back to your point, certainly is.
Yes, we know this. This is true. Hey, I don't know what to say here. Maybe wake-up calls in order. We're worrying about Ukraine. And on the other side of the world, things are really going against the United States.
They are. And I think in long run, I mean, certainly what's happening in Eastern Europe is sobering. But in the long run, the real conflict is between the West, not just the United States, but the West, all of our friends, Australia, we've mentioned, Japan, even Vietnam, South Korea, and China. That's going to be the overarching conflict for the next several decades.
Yes. And perhaps, I mean, our last president seemed really determined to do something about it. This guy, not so much.
Yeah, I think, look, we've got 11 carriers, that's come way, way down. Our defense budget, as everybody knows, I think adjusted for inflation, has actually gone down. That's not going to be able to continue to stand. Whoever's going to be president going forward, it's clearly not going to be this guy in the next couple of years, is going to have to change all that. Furthermore, we're just you've probably seen how by artificially raising the prices of hydrocarbons, we're funding Mr. Putin's war. That can't be allowed to stand. We've got to get energy self-sufficient once again, because a big problem is coming, and we got to be financially and militarily prepared for it.
Absolutely. Could not agree with you more. And this isn't a question of politics either, is it?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Torque Resources is an exploration company establishing a portfolio of premier copper gold early stage projects in Chile. Torque's management and technical teams have a strong track record of raising capital, discovery, and monetization of exploration successes. The company's Margarita Copper Gold project is located within the prolific coastal Cordillera Belt in Chile, which hosts some of the world's largest and most profitable copper mines. The Margarita project possesses excellent discovery potential for a major copper discovery due to the strength of the alteration system, large-scale magnetic targets, and the presence of copper oxide mineralization. Drilling is anticipated to begin in Q3 of this year. Torque trades in Canada under TORQ and on the OTC under TRBMF. To learn more, go to torqueresources.com. That's torqueresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
No, it's a question of a guy, Xi Jinping, who I've met when he was the governor of Fujian province. I was building hydroelectric projects in the Fujian province. This is back in 12 years ago. I met him in 2009, and he became the leader of China's Communist Party in 2012. But I can tell you, that guy is all about recouping the Chinese presence in the world in 1800. He told me himself, he said, look, Mr. Coons, and he did this through an interpreter, even though I think he speaks pretty good English.
Oh, yes.
He said, hey, guess what China's GDP was in 1800? And I said, well, you tell me. That was 35% of the world. China's GDP percentage of the world's economic picture was 35%. And I said, well, that's very interesting. And then he said, I've been to Iowa. I said, oh, well, good. He said, Iowa's got great topsoil, but it's not as good as Shandong.
Yeah.
That was our conversation. But look, this man is all about recouping his empire, and that's in his DNA, and he's not going to stop. So Taiwan's on the board. It'll be 4 years, and they'll try and catch us when we're napping.
Hey, so I'm glad you mentioned hydroelectric projects in China. Right. I've been following the Three Gorges Dam saga for many, many years now. It appears that this dam is impaired. It was faultily designed and built. It's on two earthquake faults. The reservoir itself has, the size of it has increased the seismic activity in the region. Mudslides, garbage, and sediment. What's your take on the Three Gorges Dam, since you're obviously an expert on this?
Well, my take is actually, Kerry, the same as yours. So just so you know, my company, China Hydroelectric Corporation, was not only listed on the New York Stock Exchange, but we were the largest foreign-owned power company in the People's Republic of China. We developed, owned, and operated 27 separate hydroelectric stations across the PRC. And my friends at the Ministry of Electricity in Beijing told me when they had the big earthquake in Sichuan, because we had a 50 megawatt unit out there. They told me to watch out for earthquakes because the water on the surface, as a result of the large reservoir created by the Three Gorges Dam, was weighting down that seismic area that you're talking about. And they warned me before it even happened.
Wow. Well, I'm going to ask you to come back shortly. We're going to have a long discussion about the Three Gorges Dam, because to hear from an expert rather than the information that I glean from the web, a lot of which has been censored, which my posts on certain social media sites that shall go nameless have also been censored on the topic.
Right.
But this is a global catastrophe in the making. It will no doubt lead to the eradication of the Chinese Communist Party when it happens. It's just a question of when, in my estimation. It's got global ramifications. You think the supply chain is dysfunctional now. Imagine if the Three Gorges Dam just gives.
It's not only would it be catastrophic for the people, but you're right. It would be totally catastrophic for the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah. And the people, I mean, 400 million people live below that dam. And once that water goes, it's like no tsunami you've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Most people don't realize that. But the People's Republic of China and the United States are roughly the same landmass. I mean, that's including Alaska for us. And when you look at the country, that is the People's Republic of China, there's 1.4 billion people, but 1.3 billion plus of those people are in Sichuan East. In other words, it's like from Memphis to the Atlantic Ocean is literally where 95% of the people in their country live, and everybody out in the West is only 50 million people from the Mississippi West. All of those people are downstream from that catastrophe. So it would be the biggest disaster in humanity's history.
I can't even imagine this, John. I mean, it's like you built the World Trade Center on top of a volcano. That was inactive but smoldering, like you built it at Mount Kilauea, and then you expect everything to be fine. That's the mindset of the Chinese. Kissinger said it. He said three times the Chinese had been poised for world domination, and they blew it each time. And this could well be the fourth. What they do in terms of land, overfishing, resources, ecological concern, and I'm not saying that that we aren't perhaps at times over the top with that as well, but this, they've got a suicide pact going on here. It looks like to me, it's like if you ever watch a Chinese gambler in a casino. I watched Americans, Australians, but I've never seen anything like the Chinese tolerance or management of risk, which is like nearly non-existent.
Well, you know, they don't have what we call the Socratic method over there. So like you said a second ago, Kimberly, we've created some enormous environmental problems, but people here are able, at least in some junctures, to say, hey, look, what we're doing is wrong and we got to correct it. And then everybody starts to say, well, you know, I think this person has a point. There's none of that in China, as you know. Nobody can be corrected. When Xi Jinping, for example, says, we're going to solve COVID my way, well, that's how they're going to solve it, even though their economy is crashing and 30 million people in Shanghai are staying inside for 3 months in a row. I mean, that's the way it is there.
Yeah, well, I think this is all fascinating. I could really have a lengthy discussion with you, which I intend to do at some time in the future for sure. Hey, John, if we want to find out more about you, read your work, where is the best place to find you at?
Okay, well, there's a Wikipedia page, just John D. Koons. You can go to that. As far as reading the novel, I would encourage your audience to check out They Call Me Ishmael. You can get it at your favorite bookstore. It's published by Post Hill Press. You can get it at their website. Post Hill Press has an affiliation with Scribner's, so you can also get it at scribners.com, or of course you can get it at amazon.com.
And wherever fine books used to be sold, right?
Exactly.
All right. Hey, if you have a question for John, why don't you shoot me an email? We'll get you an answer, kl@carrylutz.com. And don't forget, if you're at the site, make sure you go there, sign up for your free newsletter, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. John, like I said, I could talk with you for hours, but we're going to have you back on to do an overall China review, if that's amenable to you.
Let's do it, Kerry. You just tell me the time and place.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network. Now, more than ever.